You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Almost 8:07 in the morning. You are on Wake Up Tucson on 1030 The Voice, local news and talk. Remember to block out April 3rd, Friday night, for the Wake Up Tucson anniversary party.
Tell
Just
me more.
Block it out. No details. They're coming really, really soon. Calm yourself. Calm yourself, Ed Alexander.
Party.
Remember this hour of Wake Up Tucson brought to you by our good friends at Central Arizona Block, CabcoAZ.com. Three great locations, Wetmore, Valencia, out in Sierra Vista. They manufacture bricks, blocks, and pavers here in Arizona, in Tucson, and sell it direct to you. So it's Mayor of Pliskin Acres' favorite bricks, blocks, and papers.
Absolutely.
Place in the country.
Locally known and owned, and if you don't know what you want, they'll help you figure it out.
Welcome to the 27th annual Mardi Gras, or I'm calling it, we don't call it Fat Tuesday, that would be hurt some people's feelings. It's Husky Tuesday today, so Husky Tuesday.
You call it what you like. I didn't make it up, okay? It's a tradition. I don't know where it came from.
Traditions can be changed, Ed.
Oh.
Sorry.
Changes,
this is the 21st century, buddy. Wake up, Husky Tuesday. We love your calls about New Orleans. If you have any more New Orleans calls, give us a holler, 790-2040. If you miss anything, like our John Backer interview is running for Pima County Board of Supes, he'll be up at our candidate page at KVY.com. Everyone who's running for office that comes through this studio is going to end up on one page, their interview, that you can listen to it straight out of their mouth. We don't care what their party is. It's going to happen. Good morning to Josh Nicholson, councilperson, Oral Valley. What's up, sir?
Good morning, Chris. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning,
I like your Mardi Gras beads today.
Thank you very much. For real.
He's extra shiny today, Ed Alexander. So I haven't seen you in a while.
It's been a little too long.
It's true. And let's talk about you've now been on this council for 2 years.
Yeah, I know.
It's the fastest 2 years ever.
Yes. Yeah, for sure.
So let's talk about real quick. I don't want to spend we've all spent a lot of time talking about a golf course, but let's just get it. What is your take on the actual what happened with the golf course, where we're at with the golf course? Because there's so many people who, you know, I think helped propel you and the other three into office who really wanted to see something done with this golf course. So where is Josh at the golf course world right now?
The golf course is really tough. Yeah, I mean, all our supporters really pushed us. They want us to 18 holes or some type of reduction. We're just, getting rid of the 9 holes up on the push course, giving those back to HSL. But, it's a really hard decision and, I just want to see some progress on it. And the biggest thing is just not bonding millions and millions of dollars to get it done.
And that was a good thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, ultimately, it was just a compromised type of deal. I think the big thing is having the HOAs, which I live in the HOA. They're ponying up some money. So hopefully some of the people in other parts of the community can see that, like, at least they're putting some type of portion, some type of, a little bit of paying for the gain. Like, they want to keep the golf course, but they're paying a little bit towards it. And obviously it doesn't take over.
What's the average homeowner? What's their increase a month, you think, roughly?
Oh boy. My wife would be the better one to ask. I think it's probably maybe $30 to $50 a month. I'd have to double check with the financial
analyst. I won't hold you to that.
Yeah.
So I guess my question for you is, what do you have to see from this golf course before there really is that discussion of letting someone else run it, own it, something?
Yeah.
What has to happen for you?
So we're in the process of doing the RFD. So we're doing bids to try and figure out if we can find a cheaper operator. I mean, Troon is great. I think a lot of people like it, but, it is a public golf course. And it is, I think it's expensive compared, just talking to other residents that know golf. And, I try and do as much research as I can. And, they say it's really expensive. And, I think there's probably a cheaper operator that can operate it. We can save quite a bit of money and, it'll be good for the whole community. I mean, my idea is, it's not a country club anymore. You walk in there, it doesn't feel like a country club of a high caliber or something like that.
And it hasn't been that level in years, even before we got stuck with the course. I mean, it's always been a kind of a middle class kind of golf club kind of thing, which is fine. There's different things, different clubs for different needs.
Yeah.
But I guess my question is, you're happy with a break even on golf and then we can move on with our lives?
Well, I think we should always strive to try and do better with the golf course and see where we can save money. I mean, we're still putting a certain point of tax revenues going towards it every single year. I mean, I think that should be sunsetted at some point in time. I mean, we shouldn't be paying for golf for the next 50-100 years to keep it operating, right? So I think there's at some point, I don't know when that point is, but I'd like to see some of these improvements that we put in place and, you know, doing a pay-as-you-go, fixing things and seeing how that works. And, you know, I think it'd be premature to try and make any decisions or seeing how it's going right now at this point. But, you know, we should see a progress in a year, year and a half, and see where we're going.
How much did it lose in the last fiscal? What do you think, roughly?
Oh, man. I don't want to tell you the wrong answer because I know.
Is it over a million?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's all I need to know.
Yeah. I don't want to say exactly.
You don't have to tell me a specific number.
No.
You have a asset that the taxpayers are subsidizing to at least $1 million a year.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So for you, let's talk also, we'll talk about the police chief decision too. This is something that I'm happy as a resident since 95 that you guys went through the process and, you know, found the best candidate.
Yeah. I mean, I love Chief Riley. I think she represents Oro Valley really well. She's really humble. She's very smart. And you know, she surrounds herself with people. Like if she's, you know, not an expert in one area, she'll just bring in that person. And I think she's a person that will really listen to her staff, listen to, you know, her coworkers, and really try and do what's best for the department. And,
no, I think Kara's a great hire.
Yeah. And I think too, like doing the whole outside search, I know it costs more money. Obviously, you know, nobody wants to spend more tax money fruitlessly, but I think that'll help, Chief Riley down the road, because, you know, we did pick the best candidate in all the whole United States. If we just did internal, then there would always be the people like, oh, well, maybe you could have done better if this and that. And now it's like, no, we put that under the rug.
What I love is the people who are giving you guys crap about the $20,000, which was the cost of doing this, are the same people that say, oh, it's okay to have $1 million loss on a golf course. So,
yeah.
Let's just everyone be consistent with our intellect on this one, and we'll have better conversations as we move through the future.
I agree.
Tell me, I love listening to the playground talk.
Mm-hmm.
Who knew building a playground at Naranja Park would create the, sad to say, the Solomon Rodman Pina world to somehow freak out on you guys for building a playground?
Yeah, they were arguing so hard against it, like, well, not that we don't want a playground, but X, Y, Z. I'm like, for someone that doesn't mind having a playground, you sure are arguing really hard against it.
Right. So what I love about it is we had the survey, right, that was done a few years ago that said people want to put more playgrounds.
Yeah.
Right? Was it number one?
And it's the location of it, too. Yeah. Yeah.
And as a guy who spent a lot of time on Naranja fields for soccer, there are so many bored little brothers and sisters that will praise you when the sucker finally gets done.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
It's amazing how there was never a playground. This was a fight.
Yeah. Yeah, and also, too, there'll be more parking and it'll be a little better, too. I mean, they complain about the infrastructure. I'm like, well, the infrastructure should have been there a long time ago. Yes, that's a big part of the cost, but
right.
It was also necessary as well.
No.
And it's not pretty and cute, and it's not sexy or anything like that. So a politician, they can hit you on it like, oh, you wasted $1 million. I'm like, well, the parking was necessary anyways, and you're hitting on us, and I don't really care that, you know, you're hitting me on it. It's not super sexy as a politician to be like, we're putting in a parking lot, and it's expensive, but it's necessary for...
Well, especially it's a dust bowl.
Yeah.
Right? You have people parking on dirt. I'm surprised Pima County hasn't dinged us for a...
Yeah, the residents around there as well as... There's dirt getting kicked up every time
we're supposed to be a world-class community,
yeah.
Can we at least, you know, build some stuff like that?
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
That. All right, let's do this. Let's go to break, 8:15 in the morning. We'll do another segment with Josh Nicholson. He is an Oro Valley council person. If you have a question or comment, 790-2040 or wakeuptucsoncomments@gmail.com. We're hanging out with Josh Nicholson. He is an Oro Valley town council person, and we kind of got through a few of the... some of the more fun issues, as we say, facing the Oro Valley Town Council. We're going to get to your calls in just 2 seconds. There's a couple of calls we're going to take. But Josh, as we move into this next year, what are a couple of things you'd like to tackle as a council?
Yeah, for me, I do want to tackle the police pension. It's been going out of control. I was, you know, $5-7 million 10 years ago, and now it's ballooned to $23 million. We definitely need to tackle that. And
what do you mean tackle it? What needs to happen?
Well, we are supposed to keep a 25% reserves. I think above the reserves, I think we have about $7 million. So if we use that extra reserve money, and that reserve money, we're gaining like 2% interest. It's basically safe bond investments. We could take that, pay it down to about $16 million. I know people say the word bonds are a terrible word, and I try not to use that very often, but
right.
It's going up at 7% minimum per year because that's the target internal rate of return.
Sure.
And it's actually been going up 15% because of other extraneous issues. But at minimum, it's 7%. And if we bonded at 2%, our payment would... We're paying about $2.8 million per year towards it. If we use some reserve funds, paid it down to $60 million, then we bonded that at 2% for 20 years, talking about a $970,000 payment per year, which the extra income that we have, we could just pay it down faster. And I think it will put us in a better financial position 5-10 years from now.
And these public safety pensions is something that a lot of communities are dealing with.
Absolutely.
But the idea is you're actually starting to think seriously about it.
Yeah, it's $7 billion for the state of Arizona.
Right.
So I know a lot of times they'll say, oh, we're not the worst, yada, yada. But, you know, when I was doing my research, I talked to a police officer up in Chicago, and they said, you know, by our constitution, we're protected for our pension, but we lost our health care, and they reduced it by 10%. The health care, he said, one of his officers previously had cancer. He's like, it's $3,000 a month. It's like, it's
yeah. Having any organization kind of make the excuse to not do the proper thing because, quote, the other organizations suck worse at it.
Yeah, exactly. That's, yeah. The rest of my classmates are getting D's too. It's like, well, you know, we're supposed to be Oro Valley. We're supposed to be better than the communities. Let's, you know, act like it.
I always say someone, you know, did the, quote, a community of excellence.
Yeah.
Let's start acting like it in all parts of the of our community.
Yeah, and it'll help us retain great officers. And, you know, in 20 years when things get worse in the rest of the state, I mean, we're getting it amortized by 20 years. We're 3 years into the amortization.
Right.
And we owe more than we did 3 years ago. So is the amortization 20 years really working that great? So, you know, we are trying to pay it off. We're put the any extra money that we're getting, we've been paying it down. So we're working at it, but I'd like to see that done. I don't have any other really big pet projects and stuff.
I think in the end, the other thing we got to tackle is we have to figure out how we're going to develop.
Yeah.
This is, to me, it's one of our biggest issues is you have staff who says we got to hold on to every piece of tech park. Now they're starting to change. It's so funny. Like originally it was like every piece of tech park has got to be a company that has 13 biotech engineers. And that's because that's what economic development guys love. Yeah. They got to have that ribbon cutting.
Yeah.
But what is the reality? We're a sales tax collection community right now.
Yeah, we are.
There are lots of people who don't want to pay a property tax extra for Oro Valley.
Yeah. I think, you know, the biotech companies, I think they have a desire to move or go to Oro Valley because we do have such a brain trust there. And,
absolutely.
You know, when you talk about development, you know, they don't look at easement costs or, you know, the cost of the land so much. They really look at, you know, where are the intelligent people living? I mean, they look at the radius, like, is there, if we put our business here, do we have enough PhDs, master's degrees to be able to fill the seats? And can we get people from other places in the country to come here? And with our great schools, you know, that's one thing. We have a lot of outdoor activities, so it's a great place for people to live. And the cost is reasonable. I mean, comparing it to California or New
Correct.
York
sure,
or
sure,
you
sure.
know, even places in Lincoln Park.
I think figuring out, and I think you guys are having that discussion now,
yeah.
right? Staff has said, hey, we want to start changing up some of the zoning stuff.
Yeah.
But that's the discussion, right? But that's the discussion that has to be had. What is the mix of stuff that's going to get us through this next 20 years.
Yeah. And my issue, what they're trying to do now is they're trying to give benefits to the landowners to try and attract the employees. But I think that you do that blanket to everyone's piece of the land. Now they're just going to be able to ask more money for it. They're not necessarily going to be able to attract the businesses. Me personally, I would like to have set up like a plan for the city. Like, hey, if we get, you know, they say company Alpha coming in, well, huddle us together right away, an emergency meeting, like what kind of things, incentives can we do to bring a specific type of business, you know, biotech jobs. I don't want to, if you do it blanket to all the whole pieces of land, you could have, you know, not necessarily a mortuary service is bad or anything, but maybe you get a mortuary service or something else that maybe doesn't have the high tech jobs, but they get just as much benefit no matter where they are in that zoning structure. But me personally, like I would be willing to do a lot for a business that brings in high tech jobs, or maybe it's a homegrown business. Maybe someone went to one of our high schools or U of A and now they want to start a business. Like, I'd have more reason to give incentives to that specific. I prefer as a council, as an elected official, to be like, hey, let's help out.
And I think there has to be in certain areas, especially along the Oracle Road corridor, places for a little more density of humans.
Yeah.
Because we need human beings to buy stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So let's get a couple of phone calls in before we go to break. 790-2040 is the phone number. Let's go to Dolores on line three. Dolores, you're on with Josh Nicholson. What's up?
Hi. At the community center, sometimes the parking can be very horrendous. Especially, you know, during, you know, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock in the morning. Is anything being done to address that?
Yeah, I believe they're looking at the way they do the parking and the striping and trying to squeeze as many car spaces in there as they can. But there's a piece of empty land there that there's a private owner. He owns some land that would work good to expand the parking. But
That little chunk in front there?
Yeah, but I think he's asking a pretty high price. And, you know, to make it into parking, I don't know how we say, hey, we're willing to spend this huge chunk of cash just for parking. But yeah, we are very aware that the parking, I mean, I live 5 houses down from the community center, so sometimes I take my girls just for a walk in the evening, and you know, even just in the evening you can see how many people are parked out there. But yeah, during the day, 10 to 12 o'clock, it is.
And throw a golf tournament in there and then you're in chaos.
Oh,
world.
Yeah, it is. It really yeah. is. So I'm not saying I have the exact solution, but I know that that's one of the possible solutions, but it doesn't come without a cost.
Yeah.
And I don't know how we can negotiate something to work something out with them, but
you
yeah,
know,
that's the possibility.
This building is so weird in so many ways, right? And part of it's the amount of parking compared to the amount of stuff and space that goes on in there.
Yeah.
Right? I think there's a disproportion there. At the same time, you still got to take someone in a wheelchair has got to go through the loading dock to get to the
right.
dining room. We're still doing
yeah.
that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a weird building. It has, I don't know if we got rid of the asbestos, but
yeah.
it's a weird building to begin with. So
yeah,
I hope you're restriping.
And you know, had we gone down to 18 holes, we would have had opportunity to build more parking in there, but
that's
not
true.
The route we went. But the one option to do is to attempt to buy that piece of real estate at some point in time down in the future.
Thank you.
Dolores, yeah, thanks
welcome.
For the call.
Thank you.
790-2040. What do you like about living in Oral Valley? Because to me, when we talk about economic development, the quality of the community, because if you look at what's around you, right, between
yeah.
us and Marana, right?
Yeah.
I'm not saying anything about Sarita, but they're so far away. Okay. Is this area, it's really hard to beat, right? So when you look what's south of us in unincorporated Pima County parts and the city, just having a great community with good roads, parks that grow grass, all
yeah.
the crap I talk about on this show, right?
Yeah.
Having properly equipped and staffed police departments.
Yeah.
That means something.
Absolutely. Well, we really have an unfair advantage. The view of the mountains over there is just absolutely beautiful, and the hills. And, you know, the one thing that I love about Oro Valley more than most people recognize is just the way people will treat each other. In general, I mean, politics aside, yeah, that can be a little bad, but in general, like, you know, you're driving your car and you're trying to squeeze into the traffic, people just let you in. You know, when two lanes go down to one road, people don't wait till the very last second. People are moving over as soon as they realize that, you know, the lane goes to one. And just the way generally people treat each other is just, I think that's the most fantastic part. And I think that's why people keep coming back.
I have a buddy who lives in the city. When he comes up to the house to visit or whatever, he'll go, you know what I love about this town? There's always everyone's outside.
Yeah. Yeah, there's lots of
I go by the park, and there's kids and stuff running around the park, and there's walkers. I've never seen so many people walking their dogs outside as yeah. when I go to Oro Valley.
I think we do have a high, you know, regard for people having space and stuff. And I want to talk about, like, when you live in New York, when people are living on top of each other, like, you get people that aren't happy to each other. But, you know, my parents grew up in Carrington, North Dakota. And
there's
people are like, yeah, 2-3 miles away. You're like, oh, hi, everyone's waving, stuff like that. And like, my wife always made fun of me because, you know, I grew up on 2 acres and we always wave to the neighbors. She's like, do you know that person? I'm like, no, but.
All right, Josh, yeah, don't sorry. Be a stranger. We'll have you on. No,
absolutely.
Seriously. We'll have Josh on again. Thanks, yeah. thanks for your
Thank
service.
You, Chris.
We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Ed.
All right, Greg, the production guy, is coming in next. Pliskin Acres. Wow. Good morning to Greg, our production whiz here at the station. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
So when I saw this, I noticed that I'm looking at something weird at this. This is a band, you know, walking through the streets.
Uh-huh.
And then I said, man, those streets look really nice and clean. And then I said, oh, they're in Madrid, Spain.
Dixieland from Madrid this morning.
Are they like into Dixieland jazz in Madrid, or is it just a carnival type thing?
Or these four morons were just on vacation, so they're walking down the street.
All I don't know. They're good.
No, it's awesome. Yeah. I love it. I just, like I said, I saw those streets. I go, man, those are way too nice to be New Orleans.
Yeah.
So, sorry, New Orleans. That's the way.
New Orleans.
New Orleans.
There is no EW. You just go New Orleans.
It's like Louisville.
Yeah. Right? Oh, jeez. I couldn't live there. I couldn't get it right.
Louisville.
Louisville.
I was thinking about you on my trip to the middle of nowhere, New Mexico, because you were at our Tucson History podcast. We were talking. You said there were many U.S. senators when Arizona was trying to become a state that thought that Arizona and New Mexico should be one state and don't waste two extra senators on one of these places.
That's right.
And as I'm driving through, you know, San Antonio, New Mexico, or Las Vegas, New Mexico, I said, man, those senators 70 years ago were totally correct.
Ooh, as long as 70 years ago. 100
years ago, sorry.
115 sorry, years ago, but still. Yeah, they were right.
We should have been one state, New Mexico, Arizona.
But man, it would have been a long drive to the capital.
That's, I know.
Santa Fe.
You know, that's okay. That would have been just fine with me.
Well, you still found some good food in San Antonio, New Mexico.
I did. The Buckhorn Tavern for the green chili cheeseburger. That's where I have to disagree with my friend Dale, who said the owl bar down the street is better. I have to respectfully disagree with
you.
Are these
the only two places you can get a hamburger in the city, too?
Yes, yeah. So literally, you go 30 seconds east of I-25, and there's this little strip of buildings. And one's the Buckhorn and one's the Owl. And the Owl has much more character and atmosphere and ambience, as we like to say. But the burger is one third of the burger at the taste, quality, all that stuff.
In terms of complete vast emptiness, do you think Arizona and New Mexico are tied? Or do you think one holds the edge over the other?
I think New Mexico is way more empty.
I still remember the first time I ever flew into the Albuquerque airport. I think it was like 1997. And I remember the kid at the rental car counter going, "Welcome to the land of entrapment."
You'll never leave.
You know, I just feel like the way the population centers of both states are different, right? So I can go from Nogales to Tucson in 47 minutes, right? Then I can go from Tucson to Flagstaff in 3 hours 20.
Right.
Right. But literally from Las Cruces to get to Santa Fe is like 6 hours of like nothing.
Well, Las Cruces really, it isn't New Mexico. It's really West Texas.
I know.
You know, it's one of those things. So when I think of New Mexico, I basically just think of the area around Albuquerque and Santa Fe.
Right.
And then a whole lot of nothing. I mean, I guess you got Silver City and Deming and places like that, but still.
So, Greg, you are... you've been fascinated with the and supportive, and we thank you at Wake Up Tucson, of the Pliskin Acres experiment, as we like to say. We have the mayor on the other side of the street where he's got his Mardi Gras beads on for the Pliskin Acres Mardi Gras parade that starts at 11 o'clock this morning in front of the methadone clinic on Alvernon. So that's good. But you had your own Pliskin Acres experience.
Well, first of all, my son goes to school.
Wait a minute, you guys.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Pliskin Acres update.
Now,
there we go.
Go ahead.
It's true.
Your own intro.
Thank you.
So, yeah, nevertheless, my son does go to school in Pliskin Acres at Basis there at Alvernon in Second.
Mm. Okay.
And so last week, dropped him off. Got to the end of the street there at 2nd and Dodge. Car ahead of me comes to a stop, pulls out into the intersection a little ways, stops again. I stop behind that car, still a little bit behind the stop sign. That car pulls away after a car maybe 200 yards down the street they were waiting on.
Right.
They let that car go by. Nothing happening on Dodge. Completely empty. I make a left turn. Motorcycle cop lights me up. And I knew, of course, when I got pulled over, there's no getting out of this. It's not going to happen.
So what were you cited for?
Well, failure to stop. Of course, the first thing I say to the guy is I stopped behind the woman twice. Well, but using that logic, you could just pull up to a red light and just say, nobody's coming, so I'm going to go straight through the red light. No, sir, with all due respect, that is a false equivalency.
Right.
A complete false equivalency. I've never stopped at a red light and said, nobody's coming. Even in the middle of nowhere, I'm too neurotic to do that.
Of course not.
Somebody's watching. There's a CCTV.
Right.
But no, he needed to stop. And I guess what frustrated me, and I texted you about it,
because
I'm like, I got nailed in Pliskin Acres.
You did.
And we've just talked about the shortage. I still remember the interview you were doing at the end of the summer where they talked about the shortage of officers in the divisions around the city, Pliskin Acres being one of them.
Right.
And that is kind of what inspired the Convention and Visitors Bureau promo.
Oh, it's one of the greatest pieces
exactly.
of audio we've ever heard on this show by you.
And I could not help but to think it wasn't just about me. You know, the fine is not that big. It's an inconvenience to take the traffic school if you don't want to get 4 points on your license. Because what I did was equivalent to running a red light. 4 points, more than a speeding ticket. So obviously you take the traffic school, but it's just like I thought to myself, like, really? With all the shortage of officers we have in this city, we can have this guy sitting on a corner where nothing has ever happened? Now, I don't have statistics, but I'm really wondering, in the course of a half century, how many fatal accidents have occurred at Second and Dodge?
Because that's really your frustration here.
Yeah,
okay?
The frustration.
It's the idea that, yes, the whole experience with the cop pulling you over for this.
Yeah.
But the extra part of this is the idea that you know how strapped the rest of the city is needing cops to stop, you know, investigate murders, burglaries, rapes, and muggings.
Yeah, I mean, the rapes and muggings, and I mean, even in that neighborhood, the stuff that goes on.
Right.
You know, and if you lived in that neighborhood and your home was robbed, do you think anybody's going to show up that day to take a police report down? Of course not.
No.
But that guy, I just wonder if, like, somebody's house got robbed while he was sitting there. And they're like, hey, can you come over and help me? No, I've got soccer moms to stop, sir. Please leave me alone.
Now, we have a mutual friend of ours who lives in the Midtown area. He's right on the eastern edge.
Yes.
Of the Acres. Actually, he's probably outside of the Acres a little bit. It's creeping towards him.
It's creeping towards him, but you're right. The true boundaries, he's just a little too far east.
Now, should we, you know, do we have to do like a Gadsden purchase thing here? Do we have to say the Acres now goes to Craycroft Wilmot?
I would say Craycroft.
Okay.
And especially if you're talking about the northern edge of 5th, where
right.
the Cope Clinic is.
Right
near that neighborhood.
So this is part of this our friend of ours, his neighborhood's problem is you have the Cope Clinic there that when it was going to be put in, right, even Kazachik was actually said, hey, can we not put it here? But there's certain state laws
yeah.
that protect these things that they can just go in and you really can't fight it that much.
And nobody could in that neighborhood. No.
So what's really funny about our mutual friend is what's remind us of our mutual friend. We don't want to say his name yet, but what are they dealing with over there?
Well, the story was in the paper along 5th and near Craycroft in the neighborhoods just to the south of there. There have been people camping out in the backyards of homes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. In this most recent incident, it was the home of someone who, you know, kind of abandoned the house. I guess, you know, the family owns it, but the original owner passed away or whatever.
Right.
But there have been other incidents where somebody was just out of town and they came home and found somebody camping out in the backyard.
Now, Ed, you haven't had anyone camping out in your backyard, right?
That you not know in of? My own backyard.
Okay.
But in your neighbor's backyard?
They're not on the street.
You've had it in the neighbor's backyard? Like some of your neighbors talking about them camping in their backyard?
No.
So what you're
no,
saying is you're getting off easy in your area.
Thanks. I got a nice Cabco block wall.
Thank you. This hour brought to you by Cabco AZ, yeah. Central Arizona Block, protecting Mayor Ed from Thank various you. Characters in the Acres.
And service by
Doesn't
our
mean
own
they don't
Charles
sit Hunter. on the they sit on the corner on the curb.
Right.
All day.
Right.
But they're not in my backyard. They're in my front yard.
Okay. 790-2040 is the phone number. We'll take your tales of Pliskin Acres right now. So what's interesting, our mutual friend who lives in this Craycroft and Fifth area near the Cope Clinic, when interacting with the cops,
they, in the past, there have been incidents where they weren't helpful. I do have to say, in their defense, enough residents, I guess, complained that something was done yesterday.
Oh, okay.
So I did find out something was done, and I was happy for him.
Well, the last time we talked, he said they wanted, this is interesting, right? They said, oh, we need to have more of your people call.
And they did.
Right.
But the person who actually was helping him was actually saying that, like, you know, not in a smart-ass kind of way, but in a, that's what you need to do.
This is how the game's played,
yes,
supposedly.
Exactly.
We've heard the chief on this show going, well, we're looking at our analytics, right? And, you know, if there's enough calls in one area, then we'll start looking at it, right? But it's like, if someone called and had, here's a video, right, of guys, homeless guys cooking meth in your backyard. Are they not going to come because we didn't get enough calls?
Exactly.
They're not breaking any
law. That one meth lab that's in your kid's kiddie pool in the back right now, we're not going to go see that because it's not kicking the analytics off.
Right.
Is that? I mean, that's kind of feel like where I'm at a little bit here.
But you know, again, with the shortage of officers, I don't have an answer for this. You know, I'm completely ignorant in terms of the allotment. Someone that chooses to do traffic enforcement and ride the motorcycle, are they making that choice? Are they not available as an officer? Those days that we talked about, or you talked about on the show, where maybe two or three people call in sick. And
right,
it does lead to eight people servicing a division, maybe for an evening shift or a day shift. Is there no chance to move one of those guys over? But it's like, nope, I go out on my bike. That's what I do. I'm not assigned to anything else. I'm just curious if it works that way.
Well, I know, I mean, you're actually very generous with your eight. We've had police officers tell us that because of understaffing and who's on military leave and who got sick, you can have two or three officers working an entire division for a shift, which, of course, is welcome to Thunderdome.
Yeah, I mean, that is horrible.
Thunderdome.
And I hadn't even thought of it being that severe, but that's what I wondered. Like, and it also made me think, we know the downward pressure on those officers to fill quotas. And I really wonder, you know, does the city fall into total bankruptcy if those guys are not out every day? Like, are they so reliant on that income just to keep the books not in the black, but like not in the blood red?
So maybe I would say probably not, but I would also tell you, this is the part you're really not going to like. How many of those don't actually get paid?
Oh, you're talking about taken care of?
Or they contest it, or they just don't pay it at all?
Well, the contesting, like, I was speaking with Mayor Ed about this. You would think he could fix the thing. But
right,
he was
of course.
But he's like, nobody wins in traffic court.
they're in it. Come on.
Nobody wins
unless,
in traffic court.
If the cop doesn't come. He's got a quota, so he had like nine stops that day. Okay, he'll be there because they'll all be on the same date in traffic court. And if the cop's there, you don't get off because the judge goes, "Really, sir? This is the law." He says the number,
sure,
and hits the gavel, and you pay. That's how it works in traffic court. But if the cop doesn't show, you get off.
And you know, so I'm not going to take a chance on the 4 points,
right?
You know, to make it. I did
That's
have
a
friend
of
mine because I do video production. Saying, couldn't you create an animation showing how this person stopped? And I was like, well, you know, it would be fun if I made him wheel in a monitor and I'm standing up there like Perry Mason. I'm not going to stand for this.
Pixar and your new traffic cartoon. Let's go to break at 8:49 in the morning. Well, we're doing some therapy with Greg, our production guy.
Like, we've all had tickets, Craig, you know, so that's okay.
790-2040. We're hanging out with Greg Gerringer, our production wizard here at the Bustos Media Empire. We're just talking about him getting a ticket on 2nd and Dodge, one of the most dangerous intersections in
terrifying.
All of Tucson.
It's terrifying in that corner.
The most icy spaceport of intersections, as we call it. So you wanted to... You wanted to bring up Amphi Plaza.
And I did, because this would be, if you really extended the western fringes of Pliskin, you could take it to First and Fort Lowell.
No, it goes all the way to the interstate.
Well, so, that's true. Yeah. That's true. Yeah,
we're there.
But I just, every time I go by there, it gets worse. I mean, it's been bad forever.
All right.
But it looks like Mogadishu on the corner. I mean, there is the one prepaid cell phone store.
This is first in Fort Lowell.
Yeah, there's the Mexican restaurant. Right. And, of course, you know, you have the Walmart neighborhood market. But the whole plaza is completely abandoned. I didn't know when the last time there was. And the homeless park on the western edge there under the overhang, there's always like some filthy blankets or what. And I'm like, when are they just going to level
them
that thing?
Blankets with character. Don't say filthy, okay. Please.
When are they going to level that or demand the owner of the property level it to the ground?
Well, yeah, and you have that blank lot before you get to the boondocks.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And so there's nothing that the flag place is closed next to it. It's now a thrift store or something.
But Ed, I was mentioning, my wife, you know, is an interior designer and frequents some of these businesses with clients. There's a high-end lighting store, though.
Yes, Ed's Northside Lighting's been there forever. He owns the place, and then there's the church.
And I'm just thinking if, you know, people in $100,000 Mercedes coming down from the foothills to shop at that store, and they're looking over, and you know, there's the guy just over there, like, you know, washing himself from a puddle in the parking lot.
So I looked up Amphi Plaza, and there was a post by the Tucson Historic Preservation Foundation.
Yeah, historic.
And it says, no doubt Amphi Plaza is the center of disinvestment. Is that an understatement?
Could not be said about the entire city. To paraphrase you had the slogan for us. It's like, I was just thinking, you know, it's like where dreams go to die.
So other than downtown, you know, along the streetcar, right?
Well, right, of course.
It's true. The center of disinvestment is lots of different areas. Multi-centered, as we like to say. It was a slick example of World War II modern design. Designed by the architectural firm of Friedman and Jobusch, the firm was known for their progressive building idiom. Ooh, this is big words for me. The sculptural Chase Bank on Broadway and Country Club.
Right.
Please do not bring up the Tucson Convention Center. The Tucson City Hall, that's a dump. And the Temple Emmanuel, which is definitely a nice, interesting building. The 95,000 square foot Amphi Shopping Plaza was developed at a cost of $1 million by A.H. Handmaker and Joe Fishman, built by M.L. Lang Construction. Major tenants included Goodman Market, McClellan's Store, and Goldwyn's Department Store, with smaller stores including Southern Arizona Bank, Gerald Drugstar, Bonton Bakery, and Maddie's Toy Shop.
The hopes and dreams of post-war America. They were right there.
Yeah. This sounds like one of your podcast things.
It's a was. It's a was. Now it's an it, and they've got... They got planks holding up the side of the wall where the bank was. I mean, it's going to fall.
It's like a pirate ship.
Hey, look, when Food City leaves, you know it's bad.
Is that on the Trio Sun Corridor brochure?
When Food City leaves, you know you're in trouble.
So young Zach texted me about the police situation. He says, Mike Ortega says, we just can't hire and retain them fast enough.
Well, you know, it's been said that there are people who may have had the choice to work for Tucson, but preferred to work for other police departments in the region.
Right. You have a council and a police chief who's not on the rank and file officer's side. Okay. How about start with that? Figure out how to actually look like you give a crap about the cops. Instead of talking about how, you know, some cops are maybe not the greatest people in the world. How about truly support your cops first and foremost?
Right.
Oh, and then like any other organization in the world, you might have to overpay. God forbid you overpaid for cops. But the idea that the status quo of Tucson now, all right, is the idea that we don't have enough cops to show up. Hopefully enough people in your neighborhood call up to trip our analytics, right? Get the hell out of here. You're insane. You people are crazy. So, hey, sir, pleasure as always. Do you want to sneak Alan? Is this a quick one? Is this our...
I don't think so. Well, we only got 20 seconds, so I'm sorry.
All right, Al, we'll get you. It's a call tomorrow, buddy. We'll love you. So, Mr. Greg, welcome to Pliskin Acres once again.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
So, what's our next Tucson History podcast? What's going to be about?
The Desert Fox.
Oh, that's right.
Former coach Fred Snowden.
When do you think that's going to hit the streets?
Mid-month.
Very
good. Mid-month
cool.
For March, yep.
Perfect. All right. That's Greg Gerringer, our production wizard. Zach's coming up. And on
tipping point